my point here is that they do have some sort of Luciferian connection in their belief system, and one of the things that
everything that unites them.
Well, but see, here's the interesting thing that people don't know: when you get on past that third level of Freemasonry and get higher and higher,
yes,
they finally admit to you that you're the light that you are worshiping is the light of Lucifer.
That's exactly right, and the temple that they're building is not Solomon's temple. The words slipped. The Great Hunter.
Solomon's temple is not the...
No, it's not Solomon's temple that they are building. And if you go back to the tracing boards, even in the third blue degrees, it lets the clue out that it's... I'm sorry.
It'll come back. It'll come back to you. This is
So it's not Solomon's temple that they're building.
But see, Ken. Now, here's. Wait a minute. Do they look and search for rationalizations that give them permission to act in this way, or are they just basically so sociopathic and psychopathic that they don't have to worry? A sociopath or a psychopath, let's say, doesn't feel empathy or sympathy. So if they kill someone and they believe it's in their best interest, there is no remorse there because
that's exactly right, and that is what is taught. Although even from the Entered Apprentice stage of Freemasonry, Freemasons are taught to study, but they're not told in those first three degrees what to study. What then happens is that they start to study these doctrines that you're talking about, which tell them that their interests are the only things that matter. There is no afterlife, which is why the toast is L'chaim, to life. They don't believe in what is taught within their own religious belief. They've abandoned it, and they have done exactly what you have said that they do, is that they are prepared to do anything for their present advancement.
Well, but see, now here's the interesting thing that both of you and I will both agree with. They can't do it without duping us. They need us as foot soldiers in the crime network.
And they need to take control of all the means by which they can do this, and control of all the means that can prevent us from being duped, and do what they can to control these. And this is probably even the worst danger we're in.
Yes, but they're failing today.
Yes, of course they're failing, because the sheeple are fighting back.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, we've discovered a thing called the Internet. And this is probably our most powerful tool, and I believe is a reason why there are so many people trying to shut it down.
Well, that's right. But, the sheeple at this point can only throw a little wool balls at them. And, they're not...
As individuals, you're quite right. As individuals, you're quite right.
Mm.
But there will come a time, Darrell, and I'm convinced of this, and in fact, it's the only sort of salvation we have, is that there will come a time when these things cannot be done to us anymore.
Well, let me tell you, Ken, that my beginnings in this fight only date back 6 years, and 5 years ago is when I really...
Okay, you'll catch up.
Well, I'm a quick study, and and what happened for me was that when you get me angry, I go at you like a pit bull terrier, and...
Well, all right, I've got broad shoulders.
Well, and here's what happened with me. I built this thing with the help of many, many people, but I built up an audience in the millions that have listened, and they have listened to people such as Benjamin Friedman, and of course they've read the books, the Nesta Webster books, and the Douglas Reed, of course, when you go down these works of history and you link them to today's activities, you are not only convinced of the validity of this conspiracy, but you're convinced that something has to be done about it, or you're going to perish.
Well, indeed. But you see, this requires a belief in something more than yourself, Darrell. And unfortunately, these people who we're talking about, and I believe that the only word that describes them accurately is Zionist, they don't believe in that. They don't believe that there's anything beyond this life. This life, for them, is all there is, which is where you come in with your Talmud, both, of both kinds.
Well, you know, but we do have, see, my motivation for fighting this fight is not from personally from my own afterlife, but rather for the life of my grandkids. And that is my afterlife. In my view, Ken, my children and my grandchildren are my afterlife.
Of course. What else have you got?
That's right. So, I'm looking out there on the horizon saying, what kind of life are my children and my grandchildren are going to have?
I'm going to leave them.
And it doesn't look good if these people win.
Well, of course it is, but probably even more than leaving them material things, you can leave them a body of knowledge which they may well find a better way of using than we can.
Well, you know, this is, and so many people have used this term, I hate to use it, but they're the end game is in play.
Wow.
And they're using science now and technology now. While we are using technology against them, there are other technologies that these people are employing, such as biotechnologies, where there are...
Well, I'm sure you're well clued up as to the situation concerning AIDS, for instance.
Well, yes, I am. It's a fraud. And in fact, the way it's been done is that they have not isolated ever an AIDS virus.
They will never find a vaccine, Daryl. I think I told you my first 10 years were as a nurse. And what taught me then was that you get certain groups of viruses that mutate so fast you can't keep up with them.
Well, no, you've got to go to the website that I've got and listen to a Harvard-educated obstetrician named Dr. Nancy T. Banks.
Yeah.
And she will tell you that AIDS in itself is only a cluster of symptoms rather than a disease in itself, and that
Agreed. Oh, no doubt about it.
And that in fact, it more often than not, it's the drugs they give you to help you get over. That kill you.
Yes, it's them that kill you.
Yes.
Well, see, what I find so amazing, or what a lot of people just don't realize, is just how crazy the perpetuators of these things are. They seem to have this belief that it will affect everybody else, but not them. No, that's crazy.
It is crazy. But, however, now here we are. We're coming into the real final to the home stretch. They've pulled the plug on the Western world's economy. You know, the only people that are going to be unscathed is if you live in the middle of some jungle region and you're picking fruit off a tree. But for the rest of us, we're going to be in a pincer move.
Daryl, I'm sorry. I'm not as pessimistic as that.
Well, right now, look.
I actually believe the majority of people will find ways of surviving.
Well, that's what they thought in Russia, in the Ukraine, and that's what they thought during the 30s in America. That's what they thought in
when they drove the people off their land. You go to places like Poland, and you look at their employment levels, their income levels. They're not starving, because like in Tudor Britain, the ordinary people had access to their 1 acre of land and a pig.
Well, but let me tell you what's coming, okay? And so you understand. And this is why the urgency in my voice and in my broadcast.
Yes.
And this is not to put fear in people, because I'm one of the people who tries to give as much hope as possible. What I have been telling people is to grow a garden, a victory garden of sorts, or whatever you can do. But what we've also got here is an intentional draining down of our world food reserves. Right.
Oh, well, that's a great danger, because you're quite right. We are now producing a great deal less than we did do. When we were talking about food mountains, quite frankly, I think that was a matter for rejoicing.
Well, one of the problems that we've got today is that with the contraction of credit that's made available,
yes,
farmers
yes.
can't go and borrow for their planting,
yes.
and so they're leaving fields fallow because they don't have the capital going in.
Our set-aside program in this country is appalling, and you're quite right about the capital input. But remember, we're talking about capital input in an intensive system. Ordinary people have got to take some control over the creation of their own food.
That's they do, absolutely they do. But
I don't mean one or two bank-rolled farmers. I'm talking about millions of us.
Well,
happening.
But, you know, these powerful forces that took over Russia in the 1917 revolt, okay?
Yes.
When Stalin in the 30s began to put the hammer lock down on the Ukraine's food, which was the breadbasket of Russia,
yes.
He made it illegal for people that were starving to pick up grains of wheat off the side of the road at the penalty of death.
Yes, that's quite right.
So what we saw here is the richest agricultural land, maybe in all of Europe, the European theater, produced 30 million dead from starvation.
Yes, and it happened suddenly because we are only human beings. We can't respond and change our direction quickly enough to stop us from starving.
This is my point. So what we've got to do here, and I've been banging the drum for independence from, you know, I said even if you've got a balcony, you can throw some tomatoes in some compost and grow them.
Right.
But see, that's, I mean, how many tomatoes are you going to, grow 3 days worth of food, and you need a lifetime's worth?
Well, and it will take you 3 months before you get some.
Well, that's right. So what we need to do is to get people, while the system is still operating, to take some of the money that they may have used to pay off some bills and buy some food reserves. You need to stock up.
I'm sure it will help, but that it starts to raise in my mind the specter of the white supremacist in America. I'm sorry, Darryl, but it does.
Why? I don't see any connection to that at all.
Well, because that is what the drum that they have been beating for 30 years.
Well, because the white supremacists are giving good advice, that doesn't mean that good advice belongs to them.
Well, no, that's quite right. An idea is not responsible for those who hold it.
Oh, that's my point.
One of my party leaders was famous for that, a man called Paddy Ashdown.
Well, my point is this. I mean, if you've got the money to get, 100 pounds of rice in reserve for your family, or if you've got the ability to get some maybe number 5 cans of tomatoes and things of this nature, olive oil in some gallon jugs and so forth, and things become difficult to acquire, and there'll always be some food available, but it won't be the amount you need to stay healthy. My point is this, is that, you know, family people need to be proactive about making sure their families are going to be safe and satisfied.
You're quite right in that, Darryl, but remember, what we're talking about now is only something which has happened to us in the last generation. My family always had a stock cupboard.
That's right. Today, you go to somebody's house, and if they haven't been shopping in a week, they can't put a meal on the table.
Well, that's exactly right. And you're now being persuaded, oh, well, it's 11 o'clock at night. It doesn't matter that you haven't got a loaf of bread in the house. You can always go down to the supermarket and buy another one.
When that doesn't happen, now, see, here's what happened in America. What I'm worried about, see, is the collapse of the dollar. And Mohammed Rafiq and I, we've discussed the implosion of the dollar, and it's coming. It's going to happen because they're willing it to happen, these criminals.
Well, that's right. See, I live in a little town which is on the end of a promontory. We've got sea on three sides of us, and we've got one dominant supermarket in this town. The supplies in that supermarket could disappear in an hour.
That's right. That's right.
And the people of Fleetwood have got to then go another 20 miles to the next place.
Well, let's go back to
being vulnerable.
Let's go back to that white supremacist stuff for a minute here. What we've discovered through research is that this Nazism and this white supremacy stuff and
the
vanguard,
well,
most of the time we find the leadership coming, in America at least, coming out of the Jewish community. What we found is Southern Poverty Law clandestinely financing these people.
Yeah.
What we found in 1961 was the Nazi Party of Canada was financed by Brothman.
Well, as indeed the Bolshevik Revolution was.
That's right. So my point is this, is that, you know, that yes, they do want to start divisions and derision within the society, and see, it's just another device that they use to get people. Yes.
Yeah. Big fish in little ponds.
Well, it has worked up until now, but it's starting to fail them. I mean, within hours of an action that these people have taken of late, We've got people analyzing their actions, such as this Holocaust Museum nonsense.
Yeah.
Now, wait a minute. I'm not going to... I hope you don't take this the wrong way, but I've got an 88-year-old father-in-law.
Yes.
This man could no more mount an assault on a place with a rifle than he could get from his bed to the nursing station in his old folks' home.
Yeah, but would he want to?
No, he wouldn't want to. This is my point.
That's for the vast majority of people.
This is my point. And my point is that this had Southern Poverty Law and the B'nai B'rith crooks all over it.
Yes.
And I you know what? I said it the day it happened, and nobody was on board with me. Nobody. And I put it out on the internet, and 10,000 people read it, and they all and I got emails back saying, "No way, that's not true." Guess what? 3 weeks later, 2.5 weeks later, everybody is on board that this was a big fraud, and this 88-year-old man getting up to a second floor when there's armed guards and cameras everywhere is impossible. And by the way, let's ask this question. Where are all the video cameras they have at every door there? Why haven't we seen any of them?
Well, that's the situation in Britain, which you know how many million CCT cameras we've got here, don't you?
Yeah, but all of a sudden when something happens, they're
always facing the wrong way, or they haven't got any film in them.
That's right. Isn't that just amazing how that works?
Of course it is. This is about power and control, Darryl.
Yeah.
Which is what we're talking about right from the very early days of people saying, how do we get the power to allow us to do this? And the thing that they've always, always homed in on is our money supply.
Yep. Yep.
What's easier than that? You don't have to work. You can sit behind your desk and play with figures in a ledger or nowadays blips on a television screen. And you can manipulate millions of people. You can suddenly shut down Detroit. And what have you got? 80,000 people out on the street with no income.
Well, you know, one of the
power.
It is power. Now, what I'm seeing here, you know, is as we begin to unmask the crimes and they make the claim of anti-Semite, and of course I'm not anti-Semitic, and in fact the
how can you be?
Well, the people that are supposedly complaining about anti-Semitism are not even Semites themselves.
Well, like I say, you said you were in New York City. I bet not 1% of the Jewish population there are Semitic.
That's right.
the people who are supposed to have crashed those planes into those buildings are Semites.
Well, they didn't, but they didn't do that, though.
No,
see,
no. But if we accept their argument that they did, Arabs are Semites.
Well, but see, here's the point now. What's happening here is that old canard is not holding the sting it once did.
Well, I hope not, because it's a very effective one. See, I have belonged for more than 50 years to the Liberal Party here in this country, and it's the one thing which has silenced many, many of my good mates. We do not want to be labelled as anti-Semites. We do have this guilt about what happened, but they're not fools.
Well, what happens? I mean, see...
We haven't found a way of getting round that charge.
Well, not only that, they won't let anybody investigate it without going to prison.
Well, exactly. That's what thought crimes are all about. Darryl, they are geniuses.
Well, yeah, but see, even that is failing. What we've got in Germany, you may not know this. Listen to this, Kevin. Ken, listen to this one. The German, young German men are turning themselves in for Holocaust denial.
Yes, I read. Yeah, I went, you know Ernst Zundel?
Yes, of course, yes.
I went into Toronto, into his bunker, to face him on these issues, and I found it amazing.
Well, you can't talk about him with me, and I'll tell you why. I live in France, and guess what the French government wants to do now?
No.
They want to make it a crime for me to discuss Zionism. And they're threatening the arrest of anybody who does.
We have got to find ways of countering this, Darryl, because we've got to acknowledge it. These activities are the acts of geniuses, mad geniuses, of course. But they've got ordinary people like us running around saying to each other, what can we do about it?
I don't think it's genius in the individual. I think it's systemic genius that has been built up over time, you see.
However it's happened, Darryl, it's got us like rabbits in the headlights.
You know, because the Jews that I've read about and seen have always claimed to be brighter and better and this and that. And my experience, I had Jewish students all around me in my training and my studies, and they were never better than me. And I'm not Jewish, so the fact of the matter is, I saw that on its face as a nonsense.
But they're taught that, Darryl.
But
come on, if you can reinforce a message like that as well as that, you've really got something powerful.
Well, but how does it wash with the people sitting beside me knowing that I'm smarter than them and I'm not a Jew?
Because they don't believe you.
No, they think the professor got it wrong when I got the A, and they...
and we Goys have come to this very late.
Hmm. Well,
I don't like it, I've committed to trying to do what little I can to defeat it, but I think you have to acknowledge it. They've done an absolutely, a very clever job on us, and it mustn't wash.
Well, it isn't going to wash, and I mean, I'll take my last breath fighting this.
That's right, and the more and more people who we can get to and put the argument to and persuade, the better.
Well, I'm going to tell you what. We've done an hour here, Ken, and what I'm going to do is we only got through half of the early history. We didn't get into the... Well, we didn't even get to the 20th century, so what we're going to do here...
It's been like 30-odd years.
Well, I'm going to bring you back on in a couple of weeks here, and we're going to do part two of this, if you don't mind.
What little I know is at your disposal.
Well, I work like a mad dog on this. I really do.
Come on, that's not sustainable. You get some help.
Well, you know, I mean, here's the thing about all. I studied business and finance, and I didn't. I wasn't a historian. Now I've had to change my hat over the last 6 years and become a not the history of my books. It's the real history, and I've got a sense for when something is not kosher, if you will allow that.
Well, that comes to you, Darryl, because you're quite right. Digging out the full history is very difficult. Because remember who wrote the history?
That's right.
The winners.
The winners did. You know, Ken, I've got to thank you so much for this little burst here. We've got actually 59 minutes plus here coming on to the hour. it's been a great and lively discussion, and you've done wonderfully well with the information. And plus, we've kind of weaved a bit of a story, which is the best way to present information. We're going to come back the second time, maybe in a couple of weeks from now, and we'll pick up the story in the 1840s and 50s. And move it on through till today.
Okay.
And we'll talk about World War I and II and some of the goals that were met and not met and how it sets us up for today's activities and actions.
Yes.
Well, until that happens, Ken, I want to thank you, my friend.
Well, you're most welcome, Darryl, and I look forward to hearing from you again.
Well, hold on for a second and let me say goodbye to my listeners. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank you all for tuning in to this broadcast of The French Connection. As you all know, we try very hard here to bring the truth to the masses, and here's the interesting thing. It is in your family that you're going to find your greatest strength. It is in loving them and giving to them and strengthening them. So take care of your families, and until the next time, please be well. Bye-bye now.